been thinking a lot about Proverbs, and as we've been working through the book of Proverbs, it's been really interesting to me how much wisdom there is there, and then the nature of wisdom, and how much I've learned just from conversations here, conversations with people, just studying the book myself, reading all the various verses, just learning about it. And part of that is something I want to talk about a little bit tonight, which is teachableness. Apparently, my word processor kind of didn't like that word, and either I'm spelling it wrong or... But I think it's a word, and if it's not, I've just invented one, so deal with it. But teachableness. How are we teachable? I have a really good friend, Wayne Ribbons, and Wayne came to Phoenix when I was living there, and he knew nothing at all about banking or real estate, but he went to work for a real estate company that did a lot of investing, and he had to deal with the banks, and so he went to the first, his boss kind of gave him this whole deal and said, take this to the bank and negotiate. And he figured he didn't know what he was doing. So he went to the banker, and he started asking questions, and he asked more and more questions, and the banker said, you're just an idiot. How did you get this job? You're stupid. You don't know anything. But the banker gave him a bunch of information, kind of, and Wayne picked up a bunch of information, and then pretty soon he went to another banker, and now he took the information he got from the first banker, so he started talking a little more intelligently. And the banker said, you're really naive. You really don't know a lot about investment banking and real estate banking, and you're going to have to know a whole lot more if you're going to be successful in this. And so he gave him a bunch more information, much more data, shared a bunch more knowledge with him. And then he went to a third banker, and he took all the stuff he'd gotten from the first two bankers. He's now compiled it. He's kind of processing it. And he starts talking more intelligently, and the guy says, I can tell you know a little bit about this, but let me help you because I can teach you a lot more. And so he learned a lot more. Well, by the time he'd gone to five or six bankers, he was now an expert in real estate investing. And today, if you wanted to know about real estate investing, you go talk to Wayne because he is one smart guy when it comes to figuring out how to set up your processes and how to set up the contracts and negotiating. And he became an expert because he kind of lived through that humiliating time of being ignorant and not knowing. And one of the things that I realized about Wayne is that he was teachable, and realized about a lot of the village is that in this time of talking through the book of Proverbs, we've had kind of this push-pull. Like sometimes Eric talks about parenting and I kind of, you know, or I talk about this and Eric kind of goes, you know, and we kind of do that against each other. There's kind of a pushing and back and a pulling against just sort of not being able to deal with the whole, I don't like everything that I hear. But I also realize that there's just a whole lot of wisdom. There's a whole lot of wisdom in this room. There are a whole lot of really wise people, people who've learned how to be wise, people who've learned about the good ways to live. And one of the things that we're talking about when we talk about wisdom is what is, like, what's the point of being wise? I mean, sometimes I read some of the foolish stuff and I think, you know, I'd rather just be foolish because, you know, you're just sort of oblivious and you kind of go through life and somehow it all sort of works out or it doesn't. And yeah, you're kind of miserable in some places and you wish life would work better. But what's the draw of wisdom? And I was looking through something and it said that wisdom is considered by many to be simply the art of learning how to succeed in life. That's the point of wisdom, is to just be successful in life. And to me, that's kind of, yeah, that's good. But if that's all there is, like, so I make it through life and then I die. big deal. So there's more to it. And the second part of wisdom that we kind of deal with as we go through the book of Proverbs is more the why is there life? Why are we alive? What is our purpose? What's the point? What's the big picture? What's the overarching? Why are we here? All the great, you know, existential questions of the universe, you know, like why? Just the big why question, and the how questions, and the and what's the reasons questions, and all those great, and the book of Proverbs has addressed those, or is beginning to address those. And then kind of a third, which is sort of a conglomeration of the two, is sort of the whole spiritual aspect of wisdom. So that wisdom isn't just about figuring out how to eat and sleep and survive until I die, but it's not just about the big why question, but it's really about the intimacy of knowing God, the reality of knowing God, the reality of coming to God and being able to understand who God is. And so it's kind of those, it's the three of those things put together. So it's not just one or the other. And typically in this culture in which Proverbs is written, there was one really wise person in each maybe region or area. There was kind of the sage group, the wise ones, who people went to. And their whole job, other people supported them, and their whole job was to just sit around being wise, which, you know, would be a great job. And I know some of you kind of kicked when I was talking through Proverbs 31 and talking about all the things that the women did. And you know what the men were doing? Sitting in the gates, doing nothing, but being wise, right? They were talking about their wonderful, productive wives. And so it was, but they were just being wise, which, by the way, if your wife is wonderful and productive and doing all those things that Proverbs 31 says, you are wise to talk about it and tell her that that's true. But anyway, we kind of kick against the whole idea of just somebody sitting around being wise. But that was really what Proverbs is all about, that there's just this general wisdom, and that we are out to have this one person in our community who's really the wise one, and we all sit and kind of figure out how life works, or he does, or she does, and then lets us all know. And if you'd flip my screen, just a couple things about wisdom and knowledge. Will Rogers said, we're all ignorant just about different things. Mark Twain said, wisdom is knowing what you don't know. And my Uncle Paul said, just because you're smart doesn't mean you know it all. And I like those three statements because, first of all, there's a difference between wisdom and knowledge. Wisdom is really knowing how to use knowledge, and knowledge is just facts and data and information. And we live in a culture where we have access to data like we have never had in our lives. Good data, bad data, stupid data, ignorant data, scientific data, not scientific data, just data is everywhere. There is more information. You want to know anything, you get on the web, boom. In the culture that I grew up in 50 years ago, because I'm going to turn 55 here shortly, in the culture that I grew up in, there was one right answer, and your job was to go find it. And you did that by going to the library and using the card catalog. See three old people nodding their heads going, I remember that. The rest of you going, huh? You know, it's just, we learned how to get that one answer, and we found the right answer, then we wrote it down on the test, we got an A, and we were happy, okay? Now, there's so many answers, and there's so many ways, and there's so many things out there, there's so many facts out there that you just can't deal with them all. So Will Rogers is absolutely right. We're all ignorant, just about different things. We all don't know stuff. We all are missing data, crucial data, because our parents didn't tell us, because we didn't find the right website, because there's just information that we don't have. There's just data that we don't have. Our brains are, we don't really know how finite they are, but they only have a certain amount of input that we can keep in there. And we kind of sort through, and we're constantly trying to make sense of the data that we have. And so we're all ignorant. And that's okay. It's not shameful, and it's not bad, and it's not foolishness to not have knowledge. Okay? It's, you can be foolish instead of wise using knowledge, but it's not foolish to not be knowledgeable. And we're all not knowledgeable. Wisdom is to know what you don't know. Wisdom is the idea of, you know what, there are things I just don't know, and therefore I'm going to judge slowly, think slowly, reflect, spend a little time getting to know, make sure I gather data. The wisdom is saying, you know what, I don't have a lock on all the knowledge, and I don't have a lock on all the information and all the right answers. Part of our huge arrogance is that we think we know more than we really know. We think we're smarter than we really are. We think that our way is the right way because it's our way. My way is the right way. If you people would just do what I say, your lives would be much better. That's kind of the mentality that we have. That's how we think. Wisdom is knowing what you don't know. And as Uncle Paul said, just because you're smart doesn't mean you know it all. Apparently, when I went and worked on the farm as a teenager on my uncle's farm, I was a city kid, so I really didn't know about farming, but I was a smart kid. I had a lot of data, and I apparently got in arguments with Uncle Paul. And out of frustration one day, he said to me, just because you're smart doesn't mean you know it all. I remember that because I was pretty sure I did know it all. I was pretty sure that actually I did know a lot of things that old Uncle Paul, who just lived on a farm and had never been to the big city, just didn't know. So I assumed that he was unwise, stupid, ignorant. I had a lot of assumptions about dear Uncle Paul. I didn't see his wisdom because I was so wrapped up in the data and the facts and the knowledge that I had that I just wrote him off. I wrote off what I could have learned from him, which was a lot of wisdom. One time he asked me to take the tractor out to this one farm that he owned and it was quite a ways from the farm that we were on. And he said, before you go, make sure you check the gas tank. Well, I forgot. So when I got all the way out to this farm and I'm out there crimping hay in the field, the tractor runs out of gas. So I have to hike miles across the fields back to the farmhouse. And my uncle says, what happened? You lost your tractor. And I said, well, I ran out of gas, and he said, oh, you didn't check it before you left? I forgot. He goes, oh, well, go get some gas cans out of the barn, and he's the big red cans, and fill them up over at the barrel. So I did that, and I went and put them in the back of the pickup truck, and I sat in the pickup truck, and Uncle Paul said, why are you sitting there? You know, it's a long walk back to the tractor, and if you're going to get there and get all that hay crimped before evening, you better start walking now. So I carried 2 5-gallon cans of gas all the way back to the tractor, and I came in rather late that night, and I still had to do my chores, and you know what? I have never run out of gas in my life since that day. Because I learned something. Why? Because I'm sort of teachable. You know, it took a while. It took a kind of a hammer upside the head kind of approach. But I learned something that day. I learned that, you know what, it's always wise to check your gas tank. Just make that a problem, you know. And matter of fact, now my gas gauge doesn't work quite right, so you count how many miles you have. And when it gets to 250 miles, I just fill up because I'm getting smarter, you know. We're wiser. We're teachable. And that's what I want the village to be, and that's what I want us to be, is teachable. And if you flip my screen, how to be teachable. What is the point of all this stuff if we're not teachable? How do you become teachable? What is this whole thing about being teachable? First of all, in this passage that you have here, and I want to read it, Proverbs 22, 17 through 21, it says, "Pay attention and listen to the sayings of the wise. Apply your heart to what I teach, for it is pleasing when you keep them in your heart and have all them ready on your lips, so that your trust may be in the Lord. I teach you today, even you. Have I not written 30 sayings for you, sayings of counsel and knowledge, teaching you true and reliable words, so that you can give sound answers to him who sent you?" And then these words, Proverbs 9, 6 through 12, "Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of understanding. Whoever corrects a mocker invites insult. Whoever rebukes a wicked man incurs abuse. Do not rebuke a mocker or he will hate you. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. Instruct a wise man and he will be wiser still. Teach a righteous man and he will add to his learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For through me your days will be many, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you are a mocker, you alone will suffer." I'm just going to go ahead and read some of these other scriptures, because I'm going to be talking about them as we go along. It says, "Fix these words of mine in your heart and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads." This is Moses' instruction to the Israelites very early on, where God gives his laws, he gives his ways, he gives his rules, and then he tells them. So he says, "Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates, so that your days and the days of your children may be many in the land that the Lord swore to give you, your forefathers, as many as the days that the heavens are above the earth." And then when Jesus later on talks, he says, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he said. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet. You also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. For I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." And then, "Stop listening to instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge." And these words from 2 Timothy 3, where Paul's kind of talking to Timothy. Timothy's a young man, and Paul's kind of passing on some information. And he says, "But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, have nothing to do with them. They are the kind who worm their way into homes and gain control over weak-willed women, who are loaded down with sins and are swayed by all kinds of evil desires, always learning but never able to acknowledge the truth. Just as Jannes and Jambres opposed Moses, so also these men oppose the truth. Men of depraved minds, who as far as the faith is concerned are rejected. But they will not get very far, because as is the case of these men, their folly will be clear to everyone. You, however, know all about my teaching, my way of life, my purpose, faith, patience, love, endurance, persecutions, sufferings, what kinds of things happened to me in Antioch, Iconium, and Lystra, the persecutions I endured. Yet the Lord rescued me from all of them. In fact, everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted, while evil men and impostors will go from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. But as for you, continue in what you have learned and have become convinced of, because you know those from whom you learned it, and how from infancy you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith in Christ Jesus. All Scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be thoroughly equipped for every good work. How to be teachable? First of all, it's to pay attention. When the proverb says here, it just starts with that. It says, pay attention and listen to the sayings of the wise. You have to choose to be attentive. That's harder to do than what we think. We live in a distracted society. We are constantly distracted by the television. We're constantly distracted by our computer games. We're distracted by all the entertainment culture around us. We're always distracted. So it actually requires something of you to pay attention, so that when wise people are speaking, that you are attentive, which means you actually turn your face toward them. That's kind of the word here, is turning your face toward them and like hanging on every word, like actually wanting to hear. Eric mentioned a while back about not listening with that, in that way that we often listen, which is judgmentally, right? Where we are figuring out what our argument is while the person's talking, or what our counter statement will be. To just listen to wisdom, to pay attention to it, to be attentive to it, and then to listen to it. My mom always made the distinction between listening and hearing. She would say, you're not listening, which meant, data was going in your ear, that's hearing, but processing it was a different thing. And so when she wanted you to listen, she would grab my face and say, listen to me, which was a precursor to a spanking, or you listen, either one, your choice. But it was like time to listen. And that's really, it's that proactive. When you want wisdom, you need to be that proactive. You need to say, I am going to give all my attention to the speaker. I'm going to listen. I'm going to take what they have. I'm going to take that and not just let it go in my ears, but I'm going to process it. Now, part of processing is to be smart about that, like to be wise about that, and not just take in everything you hear and say, well, that must be truth because a wise old guy said it, but to measure it up with other wisdom and to measure it up with the other things that from your experience. It's interesting that this proverb says to apply your heart to what is taught. To apply your heart. And that whole sense there is that it's not just an intellectual exercise. It's not just data coming in. It's processing it through your heart, which means you have to be in touch with how you feel. Like, what are your reactions to wisdom? A lot of times, on Tuesday mornings, Eric and I get together and we pray and we talk about you all, and we pray for you all, and we think about you all, and often we also think about each other and talk to each other, and sometimes in those conversations, he says things, and I suddenly realize I'm having a really emotional response to that. It makes me angry. It makes me upset. It makes me laugh. It makes me giggle. But there's an emotional connection with something that he's saying. And when he says that, then I think, okay, why am I reacting the way I'm reacting? So it's not just that wisdom comes in our head and in our ears, and that we listen, but that we listen with our hearts too, that there's an application that comes out of our hearts, so that we're applying our emotion. Why am I responding the way I'm responding? Why am I thinking the way I'm thinking? Knowledge is to be kept in your heart. Throughout Scripture, we see this concept of taking in the wisdom and putting it in our hearts so that it becomes part of how we react. I've never been quite sure how to say this, but those of you who I've counseled and those of you I spent a lot of time with kind of understand that, sometimes I ask you, I say to you, I know that you know this in your head. I know you know this in your heart, your feelings, but down in your gut where you live, you're making bad choices still. Like our heart and our mind have to instruct the gut reaction so that eventually we don't react the way that we've always reacted. We don't respond the way we've always responded because something internal, way down in where we live and breathe, changes. And so it's that keeping down in our heart knowledge, so that it's not just, it's something to be dwelt on and treasured and thought about, and kind of, it's like growing up on the farm, cows have numerous stomachs, so they keep regurgitating from one stomach to the other and then back up. It's really a gross thing, but it's kind of, I don't know why I'm saying this, but you know what? It's like that, right? It's like taking this wisdom in and then regurgitating it and chewing on it some more and then chewing on it some more and thinking about it and taking additional data, additional information and mixing it all up, and it goes to stomach number two and stomach number three, and then it gets churned back through again. So it's kind of that process of holding it down inside. But it also is have wisdom ready on your lips. One of the things about being teachable is that you actually become wise. And so you have something to share. And so that you have to be ready to have wisdom come out of your own lips. There are a lot of wise people in this room who are afraid to be wise. You're afraid to say your wisdom. You're afraid to say what you know. Because you don't want to hurt feelings, or you don't want to upset people, or you think you won't be heard, or I don't know why you don't. But there's real wisdom, and it doesn't come out of your lips. And so you need to also not be afraid to have it on your lips and therefore give sound answers to people. One of the things that I've begun to understand about worldly wisdom, wisdom that's outside of God, is that it's not really wise at all, and it's actually creates a lot of pain, and part of that is because we don't give sound answers. We give politically correct answers, or we give answers that we think won't offend, or we give answers that will keep us from getting a bloody nose, but we don't give just sound answers. When someone asks us a question, part of being teachable and part of this whole teachable process, the end result is that you'll have the ability, when people ask you real questions, is that you can give a sound answer. If you would flip my screen, practical steps to being teachable and what that means for you. The very first one is the hardest one, so I'm just going to start with that. Humble yourself. Get over yourself. Be small. Stop thinking that you know it all. Stop thinking that you're the paragon of wisdom. And stop believing that just because it worked for you, it will work for everyone. Humble yourself. Matter of fact, humble yourself to the point of waiting to be asked. Sometimes we, and this kind of goes, it's the offset of what I just said about wisdom on our lips. It's also that we have to wait to be asked sometimes. Just because you are wise and you have the right answer doesn't mean people are prepared to hear it. Doesn't mean that they're ready. It's not time. It's not the right time. This idea of humbling yourself is hard. And particularly it's hard for those of us who are in positions of power or status or influence to just say, you know what, I don't know everything. I don't know how to do my job. I'm not perfect at it. I'm not the greatest employee that organizations ever had. To simply humble ourselves and say, I need to learn more. I need to know more. I need to be taught. The second one is assume every person that you meet is a teacher. Assume that the people that you meet are your teachers. I think God sends people to us, and he puts us in relationship with people because he wants us to teach each other. He wants us to know. So your assumption has to be that the person that you meet, the person that you walk up to, the person who comes to you is a gift from God and has things to offer you. By the way, that makes everyone in this room because we're all in relationship with each other now, even if you're visiting for the first time tonight, you were sent here for a reason, and we're sent to you for a reason, and we share those reasons, right? We talk about that, and we learn from each other. It's about being just assuming that that's true. Now, one of the things that gets in the way is that we regard wealth and status all the time. Somebody's wealthy. Matter of fact, pretty much in this culture, if you were wealthy, you were considered wise. I don't think that's ever gone away. I mean, I grew up in a church where the elders typically drove the nicest cars in the parking lot. And we just assumed that because they're wealthy, they must also be wise. That's an assumption. A lot of wisdom comes from people who are not wealthy. A lot of wisdom comes from people who don't have status, particularly status in this world. And that comes with that whole humbleness thing that I was just talking about, that humble people maybe don't have the status or the position that we would say, oh, they know something, so I'll only go sit at their feet and learn from them. The whole wealth and status thing is interesting because in the conversation that we had about these lovely people who've offered $300,000 if we can raise $100,000 to help us secure a space of our own, when we were having the conversation with the people from the Barnabas Foundation, who are the go-betweens in this thing, I said, I would love to know who these people are, but I recognize and realize that we never will. And I said, because they want to remain anonymous, that's why they're going through this issue. I've been trying to think of who it might be. And the guy pointed out a book called The Millionaire Next Door. What happens is we think millionaires are people who live up in the foothills and have the mansions and drive the great cars. But he said the vast majority of millionaires live in comfortable little neighborhoods in regular little houses next door to you, and you don't know that they're millionaires because they don't walk around with the ostentatious showing off of wealth, which is why they're millionaires. And so that whole sense of you will never know. One of the things that we assume is that people who live up in the foothills are the wealthiest people around. They're not. Usually they're just in deeper debt, and they're pretty scared. And they're all two paychecks away from disaster, just like the rest of us, okay? And so, but we make assumptions about that, and so we think wrongly that people who have wealth are wise, and we think wrongly that people with status are wise. One of the things that if you want to find out if someone is wise and someone who you should sit at the feet of, ask revealing questions. Ask questions that will reveal wisdom. Okay? Ask the kind of questions that will allow the person to reveal wisdom. Most people have learned to keep silent about their wisdom. But if I go up to Keith and I say, Keith, would you tell me about how it is that I should organize and structure my life, because I know that you're a guy who can organize and structure things, then I can listen to him and I can discern whether or not what he tells me is wise or not, because it will reveal what Keith knows. And if I never ask him questions, I won't know what he knows, and I won't know whether or not he's wise or foolish. Okay? But if I ask those questions and he's allowed to reveal what he knows, then I can make determinations about whether or not that's wise or not, or foolishness. So ask those kinds of questions. If you want to be wise, you have to ask questions that allow people to reveal things to you so that you can determine whether or not it's wise. This is the one way to immediately understand if someone's a fool, and that if the person insults you, mocks you, or abuses you, discontinue the conversation. If Keith immediately says to me, Rod, you're such an idiot, you could never be organized, you're the worst, most unorganized person in the universe, you just plain stink, and no one can help you because you're beyond help, discontinue the conversation. Because, you know, it's not going to be helpful. It's not going to go up from there. It means he doesn't care about me. He doesn't have my heart's interest. He doesn't want to impart wisdom to me, and he doesn't have wisdom because he is a mocker. He's a fool if he said those things. So that's one of the measures. Now, we have to be a little sensitive here because, and I want to skip to the very last one, correction and rebuke are good, because sometimes he may be correcting me or rebuking me. He may say, Rod, you actually have the capability of being organized. You're choosing not to be. That's a rebuke. That's not an insult. That's a correction. And I need to listen to that because that's a sign of wisdom, okay? That's a sign of wisdom. And so I listen to the correction and the rebuke, but don't listen to insults, mocking, and abuse. And a lot of people will abuse you and mistreat you when you ask for wisdom. They will put you down. They will call you names. They'll make fun of you. Have nothing to do with them. That's what Proverbs is talking about when it talks about the fool, when it talks about the mocker. Just disengage. Completely disengage from that conversation because it's not going to help you and it's not going to produce wisdom in you. Consider your way of life and theirs. I love Dr. Phil, and every once in a while, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, if I happen to be home, I flip on TV and I listen to a little bit of Dr. Phil, and trust me, a little bit goes a long way. But you know what? Dr. Phil has a great question, and it's a question that he's always asking. He always says, so how's that working for you? And I love that question. You know, how's your way of life working for you? Is it good? Is your marriage good? Your relationship good? Financially, are you doing all right? Your relationship and your job, that's all good? Is it working for you? Consider your way of life. Consider your own way of life. Think hard about it. Is this what I imagined? Is this what I hoped for? Is this what I was dreaming about? You know, I think sometimes we lose track of those dreams we had when we were little kids of how, you know, I wanted to be a jockey, you know. But, which, you know, when they do the Clydesdale racing, baby, I am so there, you know. But until that day, I'm kind of messed up, right? But if you look back on your dreams, look back on what you hoped for, what did you want out of life? What were you expecting out of life? What did you hope life would bring you? To think on those things and then look at the outcomes of the way of life so far. How's that working? What were your dreams? What were your hopes? What were your desires? What were your passions? And some of us have been so wounded by life that we've shut those things down. And so part of it is to go back and with help and in community and with loving people around you, reopen that passion, that hope, that desire, and say, I want to try again. I want to believe again. I want to have hope again. And so consider your way of life, your own way of life. But also consider the way of life of the people that you ask. If you look at their life and their life is just a total shambles in every area, be careful. Because it probably means that they're not acting wisely. Now you can talk to them and maybe you'll learn what not to do. But because there's always that side of wisdom. But consider the way of life of the people that you are around. Is that something, is the way they're living, is their ability to navigate the realities of life such that that's something you would like? So when hardship comes or when pain comes or struggle comes, how do they handle that? When things go bad, how do they handle that? When things are good, how do they handle that? That's a lot of times the harder one, right? When they have a lot of money, how do they handle that? When they have no money, how do they handle that? Consider the ways of life. So just those practical steps of how to determine who can teach you and how you can be taught. You flip my screen. The crucial beginning of being teachable is, of course, what we've talked about before, is that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That our ability to understand and sit in the presence of God and not, and stand in awe of who God is the very beginning of wisdom. A second part of that, which we haven't spent a lot of time on, is that knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Goes back to the knowledge question. Facts. Knowing about God, knowing how God is, knowing data about God is hugely important. That understanding, that will lead you to understanding. Knowledge and facts, by the way, are not understanding, but they'll lead you. So you have to know about God. How do you know about God? Well, you spend time, looking at what he says, and you spend time in conversation with people who are his people, who've experienced the presence of God. So that as we are teachable, we're teachable when we understand, first of all, that God is awesome, and that we are in awe of who he is. And we begin to understand and we become teachable when we understand the knowledge of God. When we take all the facets and pictures that we have of God and we begin to make them gel inside of us so that we understand how God works. Because once I understand how God works and how God is, then I can see the flaws in people and I can love them without fear. I can honor them. I can see the image of God in them. I can see who Christ is in them. All that is true once I understand who God is. This understanding, by the way, is not just a mental understanding. It's a full body acceptance of who God is. It's mind, soul, spirit, every part of me. So, responses, pushbacks, thoughts, ideas. Pardon me? Sure. Yeah. I think that's first of all, wise people do foolish things. So if you're looking for perfect wisdom, you're not going to find it. You can't find somebody who's wise in every area of their life. Be careful about that so that you're not rejecting wisdom. Real wisdom, helping you acquire things you need, is wise, but it's also, that doesn't mean the person is wise in every area of their life. So that's part of the discerning that we, and yes, do we have to honor our parents? Of course. Honoring is not doing what they say. Honoring is listening to them, evaluating what they say, and taking their wisdom and applying it in our lives and in our settings. Other comments, thoughts, questions, ideas? Yes. Did I say that? That's a good answer. I don't know. There are politically correct answers and answers that are acceptable that seem like good answers, but they're, I think what we're looking for is sound answers, answers that are driven by wisdom, that are appropriate answers to the situation. sorry if I... I'm... Okay. Yes, sound is a true answer, a correct answer, the right answer for that situation. So if in my previous example, if Keith says, Rod, to be organized, first of all, we need to sit down and you need to take 10 minutes every morning to organize your day. That's something I can listen to and say, well, that's a sound answer. That's a wise answer. That's a good answer. Whereas you're hopeless is... Exactly. Right. Reasonable, sound, appropriate answer. Very good. Sound doesn't crumble or fall when you push against it. Exactly. It stands the test of time.
Is wisdom
Thanks for bringing that up, because I keep having this conversation with people, and then I realize that when we preach through the Book of Wisdom, Proverbs, we think that this is a, if I do this, then this will happen. It's not true, okay? Just because I invest wisely doesn't mean I'm going to end up rich. It doesn't. There's no correlation. It is just more likely, okay? It is always more likely that if I invest wisely, I'll have money when I die. If I don't, then I won't. You know, it's just more likely. And so all of this wisdom literature is couched not in, if you do this, then this is, you know, we're so Greek. Our minds are so Greek. Greek minds always say, boy, if I just do the right thing, then the right answer will appear, and boom, then everything is life. Life is grand. Ouch, I should have done that. But Hebrew minds were, oh no, we hold things in tension, and you know, we don't get too excited this way and too excited that way, and it's just, it's more of an understanding of normally, it's more likely that this will be the result if you live wisely. Thanks for that, because I want to bring that up. Kim. Thing, part of that is when somebody tells you you're good at something, then you kind of want to start living up to that, right? Like when people say, oh, you're a good organizer, then you go, well, I better get organized. Yeah, it's kind of fun. Because it does call that out of, in community. There's no doubt about that. Other questions or comments? Yes. God is scary, and that's true. And God can, you know, decide that he doesn't want to maintain gravity anymore and we're all, you know, dead. And, or, you know, I'm going to do away with oxygen for a few minutes. And, you know, it's, God is powerful and God is scary. And the fear of God, that fear of God is not unhealthy. I mean, it's, that can lead us to also bow our knees before God. But when we talk about fear of God here, we are talking about the respect, the honor due God, because that's due to God because of who he is and because of what he's done. So, yeah, I recognize that we're always running between those two, and I do the same thing. I would concentrate on the people that are on both lists, who are good and wise, that are both good and wise, because I think that's, there are people who cross over, and I think those are the people that we need to understand. One more. Father, thank you for wisdom. Thank you for wise people. Thank you for surrounding us in community with people who are wise. Thank you for making us wise and for calling out wisdom in us. Father, I pray that for those of us who have been foolish, that you would teach us wise ways. And for those of us who have been wise, that you would bring that wisdom to our lips, and that we would share it with each other. And Father, I pray for each person in this room, that they would be teachable. Teachable by your Spirit, teachable by you, first of all, but also teachable by others through whom you speak. Father, help us all to look to each other and to look to you and to be teachable. I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. As a response, there is communion. If you are a follower of Jesus Christ and one who truly loves him and serves him, back there and somewhere else, over there, up there, and back there, yes, the one that bites me, there's bread and there's juice. And as you take the bread and as you dip it in the juice and as you eat it and take it in, please remember that Jesus died for you and that he gave his life for you and that he rose again and that he lives and he lives in you. If that's not something you can say, if that's not true for you, then please refrain from doing that. That would just not be appropriate. So thanks for not doing that. We also have baskets I'll pass around. If you're visiting with us, there is no expectation at all that you would give. But if you are regular, there is an expectation that you would want to join in and give to the village. And so please do that. Also, if you need to be prayed over there, there's a